Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome back to the Not So Fit Couple podcast with your hosts, Lucy Halden.
And Benjamin Halden.
Today we are joined by Jake Williamson. And what we talk about today will benefit so many of you, especially if you are interested in competing in HYROX, as we have the world record holder with us.
Indeed. And I know a lot of you guys are listening to the podcast whilst you're training or whilst you're running. So there's going to be a lot of helpful tips in here if you're looking to do your first HYROX, whether you're looking to do your next HYROX, or whether you've got some kind of race run that is coming up. There's going to be so many little nuggets of information that you can take away and apply to your training.
We also dive into Jake's history in terms of coming out as a gay footballer and basically being cancelled by his whole team and receiving horrendous homophobia.
This is going to be the last episode before Christmas and New Year.
Sad.
So we want to firstly thank all our listeners and viewers who have tuned in for this year and supported us and continue to do so, and wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
We are so excited to enter 2024 with you guys.
Enjoy the episode.
We can absolutely start with slurpers though. We can.
What's the Chinese soup that they? It's really pho. Popular. Is it pho?
Pho. I think that's Japanese.
Pho.
I'm going to have some culture appropriation going
all
on.
All of them. Yeah, but no, when people slurp or Ben does it with, the way Ben drinks Monster, he gulps, but he gulps like six times. No,
I don't. I drink like a normal person. Lucy has this real...
I self-taught.
Yeah. Lucy has this wit.
That's not horrendous.
If that was me, that would have been the end of the world.
I would never slurp.
Yeah, see, Jake would never slurp.
But the other thing you're not allowed to do is, you're not allowed to do that.
But so I'm self-taught that I don't do that anymore because I can't listen to myself.
So as long as you don't drink, breathe... or exist, you're okay,
You're absolutely fine. But Jake, welcome to the Not So Fit Couple podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We're very excited to have you. And I'm actually going to dive in with quite an intense way to start this podcast, because we know you really well, but our audience might not know everything about you and where you've come from and everything like that. So there is a headline that I read and that I found.
Oh God.
Gay footballer was cut off by team because of who he is, so he decided to do something about it.
Yeah, pretty accurate, to be fair. Where was that?
It was in an article. It was online on one of the articles. And there was the few that I just picked one of them.
Yeah. So I did a podcast with BBC when I kind of started coming out, because there's not a lot of people in football who come out and want to talk about it. So I used to play first team at Coventry Uni for 3 years, and then went to Poland for a little bit, tried to play out there. That was tough because I had to wait like a whole month before I could then sign for a team. They're only allowed three non-national players, and they already had three at the time. So I then came back, then I went up to Scotland and had a 4-week trial up there. Didn't make it, came back, was then going to move to Chicago and hopefully try and play for a few teams out there just to kind of keep chasing the dream a bit. COVID happened, and then it kind of made me realize that I probably wasn't going to be a pro footballer, which was a bit sad, but we have to come down to earth at some point. But then still carried on playing Sunday football. So I met my partner, Paul, and then after about a year, moved up to Birmingham, joined a team on the Sunday like circuit up there. And then after about a year of like being out and quite comfortable with friends and family, I was like, I'm not going to do a massive post about it, but I'll just kind of post, because when you come out, it's quite difficult because you don't really know who knows and who doesn't. Mm. And because you're still not quite 100% comfortable with your own self, and you're still a bit in like denial and shame and like, I'm gay, but it was kind of just easier so that if I post it, it's like everyone knows. Mm. I don't need to go and tell anyone and be surprised. Did that, and then had a conversation with one of the guys at the BBC, and he was like, there's not many footballers that come out. Do you want to come on the podcast? Went on the podcast, and then the team I was playing for completely like cut me off from the group chat. I was, without being big-headed, I was like the quite comfortably the best player on the team.
Yeah.
Had played like four games for them. I think I captained one of them. And then, yeah. And then I met a girl, bumped into her later on, and she was like, I spoke to her about it, and she was like, oh yeah, I'm really sorry it happened. Because even at the time I was like, is it because of that? Like, yeah. Did they just order that? But like, it kind of had
so
to
when
be.
You say cut off, they kicked you out of the group, or it was just sort of social isolation?
So the team sheet went up on the for the weekend, and I was like, because I told the guy I was available, because he always asks, it's like, who's available on the weekend? And I just wasn't in the team sheet. And then, yeah, bumped into the girl. She kind of did like a bit of admin stuff, like bought the oranges and maybe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hurry up. Yeah. And she was like, oh, yeah, the manager put in the like team management group chat. Oh, have you guys heard about Jake? And at that point, I was like, oh, that like it genuinely was for that reason. Yeah. So it was, I mean, even looking back now, it's like, Jesus Christ.
Mm.
Like, did that actually happen? It didn't impact me too much. I kind of was like, all right, I'm going to step away from football for a little bit. And I was marathon training and stuff at the time anyway. So it kind of didn't impact me too much. But it's one of those where I was like, I'm quite confident and comfortable in my own skin. It took a while to come to terms with the fact that I was gay, but I can just imagine how difficult it could be for someone else as well if that happened to them.
Mm.
So I then was like, effectively fuck this, like I'm going to be a bit more vocal and kind of help people who are struggling with coming out and being in sport as a whole, because as we know, there's not many people that are.
It's not many people in football especially. I mean,
well, there's one in the Championship, Jake Daniels, who's just, I think he just signed a pro contract, but he was 18, he was in academy football, so I think it will eventually get there, but it's like at the moment nothing.
I think the only thing I can remember from going to the football for many years is being an Everton fan with James McFadden. I don't even think he came out. I think it was just more so rumours, and there's rumours about him and Will Young and a few other things.
Yeah, but then even then, it's like the amount of abuse and stuff, because even 10 years ago, like it was kind of accepted that you could be homophobic in a way. Like it was pretty much illegal to get married. I think it was 2012. I should probably know this, but I think it was probably 2012. So even when we were at school, like it was illegal to be gay or to get married as a gay couple. So like you're kind of just told that it's a bad thing. And it's like the amount of shame and denial that you put on yourself when you're like, I want to be a pro footballer or I want to be a pro athlete.
Mm.
How can I possibly be both at the same time? So that was...
Well, that must make it difficult for people, and probably a big part of the reason why people don't come out, because if it is your career and sole income, you're then jeopardising that as well, which obviously shouldn't be the case.
There's so much to it. Like we could talk about this for like hours, but just like even like pro football environments, like you're meant to be this like masculine, you're meant to be the best, and then you're told that being gay is emasculating and might jeopardize your football career or athletic career. Why would you choose that? Because it's not like a race. It's not obvious. You can quite comfortably hide it, and but quite easily hide it. Like I don't need to tell anyone. I can just carry on as a straight person. Whereas like if you are black, you can't hide that. Obviously there's a level of like racism and stuff which still happens. But I think it's become better, but because of that obvious factor. Whereas when you're gay, you can hide the fact, like, why would you choose to jeopardize your career? And not like being gay is a choice, but coming out is a choice, essentially.
Did you delay coming out because of this exact reason in terms of football? Like, would you have come out? How old
were
you?
If I was still playing football, I don't think I'd come out.
Right now?
Yeah.
Really?
If I made it pro, or if I made it, I don't think I would have come out.
This is probably just...
Because I don't think I would have met Paul.
Mm.
And Paul was the role model and person that was like... Because he worked in pro sport.
Mm.
And I was like, oh shit, I can be like that. So that, that was a big turning point, meeting Paul. And just being, accepting myself and being gay, essentially.
Yeah.
Whereas if I still played,
I'm probably quite naive to it, just because I just thought it wasn't that much of a taboo topic anymore.
But I played football for 20 years, probably from like the age of like 5 to 21, 22. And I haven't met a single openly gay player, coach, referee, And I've played from every single level, from grassroots up to professional. Which is nuts.
That blows my mind.
Obviously I have, but I've not met anyone that's openly. So that's just, it's just a summary in itself for how difficult it still is.
Well, it's more so obviously you, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but with what your team did and then basically they're cancelling you out because you're gay, that is homophobic as fuck.
Yeah. It was tough because there was never, no one ever said like you F or you gay or you, like it was just like,
cancelled.
Yeah, so it was hard for me to be like, was it home? Like, was it about? Obviously, it was, but I couldn't really, couldn't really and go to the FA or go to anyone. And it was only Sunday football anyway, so it's like pretty sure the team folded the year after anyway. But still,
because I obviously kind of knew your background anyway, but listening to it from you, it makes me feel really sad for you at that time. And I can imagine, as you said, there must be so many people in sport, because the sport industry, if this was maybe like the beauty industry or hair, I think that's, I don't know, I'm obviously
it's
can't
weird. There's
speak
a lot of
it.
Different industries, like women's football, for example, it's all, it's almost like expected of you to be gay or men, if a man is in makeup or hair, you probably expect them to be a gay man.
Yeah.
And it's really, I had this conversation the other day and it's like, even in women's football, like there's some players that are together. In women's cricket, there's two players that just got married. Imagine someone, it's so funny. Imagine someone in men's football and two players from like Manchester United got together and got, you just can't picture it. Like I can't even visualize it as a gay man. And it's like, we're so far from like having that in our mindset that that's also, it's kind of quite a nice summary of where we are in terms
where
of,
we're at.
We were having a conversation before just about the disparity between probably the generation that's even after us and then the generations of like your grandparents and stuff and how they've only known it to be either illegal or frowned upon.
Or like a disease.
And how it's really then difficult to change the thinking behind that versus the generation that's even before us, and that's all they've known is it to be accepted. So there's a big kind of gap between the thinking and the logic behind it. But even it happens in gyms and stuff as well. You hear, I remember we used to go to, I won't mention the name of the gym, but I used to go to a gym and there's guys in there who would speak about it sometimes about, oh, there's someone gay who's in the changing rooms. And it's just the way, I just find it strange that the way they think that they, just because there would be a gay man in there that they think
couldn't go in.
That person would be attracted to these two fat old men. Do you know what I mean? Just because someone's gay, they're attracted to everyone as well. I'm not going to be attracted to you. And that's the weird thing it's sometimes to conceptualize is that thinking behind everyone's going to be attracted to you.
It's definitely like a shifted mindset, I think. And it's like, if you have those learned behaviors and you're taught that from a young age, you're naturally going to kind of believe them until you go into the real world. And it's like, social media is also another one of those things where it's like, it kind of is the real world, but at the same time, it's so far removed. Yeah. Like it's so far away from the actual truth that it's like, you could be anyone.
Yeah.
And I think like, I think truth and transparency always comes through and like authenticity always like does shine. But like, there's so many times where you meet someone and they're just like, you're like, Are you like the same person as you like you portrayed to be? And it's like, it's crazy. But that's like the same thing in terms of, as you said.
We spoke about a couple of negative points to do with it. And obviously some of the things that you've been through. What are some of the positives that have happened? Because I'm sure there'll be people listening who may know someone or even be thinking about themselves. Mm. What positives have you, I suppose, been on the other end of since coming out?
The biggest thing is the number. So as I said, I played football for 20 years and didn't meet a single person that was openly gay or openly out. And the amount of messages and people that do confide in me, like it's obscene. Like, and it's like, oh, I can't come out. Like I physically can't come out. Or how do you come out? And it's like, and I kind of try and take them through the steps. You can't really be like, just do it. It's easy. Like, once you come out, in the generation we are in now, it has been relatively, apart from that one football incident, it has been relatively easy for me. It's almost been like a celebration. It's been like, because I'm pretty good at sport and some people say I get pretty privileged as well, like it's not been as difficult for me to come out. But there's also, there's other ends of it in terms of when you do come out, in terms of if you are more flamboyant, you're probably more likely to receive homophobic abuse. Mm-hmm. Whereas for me, if I walk down the high street, I'm not going to get anyone, hopefully not going to get anyone come up to me and like, oh, you, and you put her or whatever people do say. But it still happens. There's still attacks and everything going on. But that, I think that probably is the biggest thing for me. And knowing that I've genuinely helped those people as well. And like, by, and not even just by, I try to reply to all the messages that are genuine, but yeah, not even just those people, like people that just see it and I can be vocal about it and I can celebrate it and I can go to High Rocks and I can win events and I can be like, and that's why I was disappointed when High Rocks didn't share it. Because it's like that visibility, as we just said, is so key. Like I didn't have anyone, I couldn't see anyone that was like me winning, competing, playing sport, playing football, being good at sport. And be like, yeah, I'm gay, I'm what? Like,
yeah.
I'm proud of it. So that's...
Just going to pause the podcast because you can officially now buy a share of My Coach. And I hope that got your attention.
Which is crazy. This is the very first time that we are opening up for investment and crowdfunding for our business, our baby. And you can do so by the link that is going to be in the description.
The reason that we've chose this specific type of investment is because of you guys. You guys mean more to us than we know. The My Coach community and what we have built is because of you. My Coach is the personal trainer in your pocket. It's the app that you didn't know you needed until you had it. And you have the opportunity to have a percentage of that. And essentially, My Coach's future.
Yeah. We want to really scale and develop what we're doing next year and give you guys as listeners or members the best experience possible. And our goal is to make sure that the MyCoach app becomes the number one fitness accessory to your gym membership.
You can invest as little as £10. Now, this is incredible. All you need to do is hit the link below, register your interest on the priority access, and everything is there for you.
Side note, we just want to also let you know that any investment is never risk-free. So please don't invest unless you're prepared to lose the money that you invest in. This is just a side that we have to let you know about. Back to this week's episode. Yeah, there's a rugby player a couple of years ago came out. That was a big thing for rugby.
Keegan.
I can't remember what his name was now. It might have been a Welsh player. Really, really famous. I'm sure Cal can probably do the old stato. But that was really big for rugby. And that was celebrated a lot. And that was really good to see. Because I think rugby even more so is the...
Yeah, macho.
Macho yeah, blokes, but then ego, pints.
You can also, like, they're kind of a bit better with it as well because yeah, they are kind of
quite... It's a bit more of an upper-class sport as well.
like it's quite... They're all pal. It feels a bit more pally and camaraderie, doesn't it? Rather than...
Yeah, no, it's Gareth Thomas.
Gareth Thomas, that was it. Yeah, yeah.
That was a while. He was like the first, wasn't he? But he I think he openly talks about having HIV as well now, which is quite good because it's a massive taboo subject.
Why is that so taboo?
Because it's when I grew up, but like our parents' generation growing up, HIV and AIDS was like the gay disease. Mm-hmm. Like you are like
Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, like if you watch like It's a Sin or anything, like I couldn't finish watching it. Like it made me cry.
Mm.
Like
Rich.
It's a Sin.
I've seen that.
Is that with the medication one?
The guy from Years and Years.
Yes.
Ollie. And it's also one of those where it's like, if you have it, it's like, you're going to pass it on. You're going to die. You're going to, whereas now it's like, I think I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty certain the HIV rates are higher in heterosexual couples than gay couples anyway. So,
really?
I think so.
Yeah, it's because of enhanced screening in the gay community, I think. From what I've read about it, it's because obviously it's now such an issue that the gay community is switched on for. Mm. And they get screened.
And
we've
got
tested.
PrEP, which is a drug, like a HIV.
Well, a pre-drug.
I'm not sure the name of it.
Preemptive.
Yeah. So like I think you can just take it as a course. It's like a prescription, which has been huge for the gay community, I think. But
one of the things you spoke about, I was just thinking of people who came out in sport. Tom Daly, he came out, and I don't think that was
you
as such.
You look like Tom Daly.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Was it the Speedo?
Speedo.
Because he obviously did diving, but it's hard because you do see like football, rugby is like quite like masculine sports.
Another one, it's like, if you look at diving, the GB team is pretty much predominantly gay men.
Are they?
Mm.
Oh, I only realised that Tom Daley, because his was, he's and the one I know about.
I'm pretty sure it is anyway. I might be making some assumptions there. But yeah, another one where it's like, it's almost gymnastic-y type movements and fluidity, and it's almost like a gay sport. Like, we talk about it quite a lot in terms of like gender roles. In sport, you have girl sports and boy sports, whereas they're now trying to kind of like blend the two and not make, like, as a, I put a post up earlier and I was like, gender's a construct. Sex is obviously science, but gender is something that we've made up as a human race. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just kind of going on the lines of that. It's like trying to reduce, and a lot of people will be like, oh, it's brainwashing kids. And then obviously like there's a whole thing against anti-trans movement at the moment where they're like saying you're brainwashing kids and things like that. So it's quite difficult, and you kind of have to be quite careful when you talk about the subject. But I think it's quite important to talk about, because of, even not as like a gay or straight thing, but gender roles in particular as well. And kind of just having people not feel like they shouldn't do certain sports or certain fitness activities, because we know the benefits that fitness has, and it's why we're in the world, because it's so core and key to everything. Pretty much.
Movement. Yeah, the equality in sport thing, but from like a woman to a guy's perspective, like I want to do loads of young girls in sport, because even when I was growing up, I mean, I did swimming and gymnastics and running, and but we didn't, I went to an all-girls school.
But again, you were probably lucky that your parents pushed you into those things. Like,
but I didn't do football. Like I was like, oh, when I was little, I was like, football's for boys.
Yeah.
Like rugby, and then they started introducing like tag rugby in the all-girls school, and it became more inclusive, whereas now you get loads of young girls who want to do football and rugby, and obviously the Lionesses, and they're winning, and
it's good, isn't
it? Really great, isn't it? Like, it's so good for young girls in sport. So that's like, the gender thing's like a whole nother in sport. It's still seen as that's a boy's sport, and that's like, gymnastics is quite
I think it's definitely getting better, though. I was even thinking about this the other day, about how often I used to hear the term tomboy.
I was called a tomboy.
But that's what I mean. But now you don't hear about it as much, because I think it's just, it's becoming more normal just for girls.
I think
to want
as well,
to play sport.
Like it's things like that where like you don't necessarily see it in your own head as a negative. Like it's just in your vocabulary. Mm-hmm. Like at school, it was so easy to just be like, "Oh, that's so gay." Like not meant as like a physical insult.
Train the other day, it was annoying.
There was a girl. So we were coming back from London the other day, and there was a young girl next to me, and she must have been 9.
It was my kid that would have slapped her.
She was like 9 or 8, and her mum was talking to her, and this little girl, I had AirPods in, but I wasn't listening to anything because the conversation started to interest me. And she was like, oh, like he did this thing and it was so gay. And the mum was like, you can't say that. As in the mum just literally, she's like, you can't. She was like, why? But like my actual friend, he actually, he came out as gay, but he didn't tell me. And the mum's like, he doesn't need to tell you. And this little girl was like, he does because he's gay, and like he's my gay best friend. And but she was like 9. I was like,
but she'd used the phrase in 2 different ways. Yeah. She'd use it as a first and negative, and then saying about a gay friend. Mm-hmm. But she's just shouting it. She's just quite an annoying little kid in general.
But it was, I've never heard like a 9-year-old kid describe something as, oh my god, that's so good. Yeah. I'm thinking,
but it's at school it used to be so common that it wasn't necessarily a negative in your own head, it was just in your vocab, and now we've grown up, it's in our vocab, it's trying to get it out of people's vocab. Like I feel like, again, another one of the benefits is like a lot of my friends, they now kind of think about those types of things as well because they have me as a friend. Whereas before, like, we didn't have any gay mates, like we grew up in quite a small town, like, whereas now it's like ally.
Yeah, completely. Like 2 of my best friends are gay, and you're just a lot more aware of how people feel in like certain situations and things like that. Because if we go out together, like if like a guy hits on her, she's like, I'm a lesbian, but they think she's joking, and it's like, no, like she's married to a woman. Yeah. Like it's not a joke. But yeah, the way people perceive things nowadays, even from like friends of gay people, it still blows my mind.
There's still that other element of things as well, isn't there? Which is, I think we saw a lot of in the World Cup, where there's religious beliefs that then conflict.
Yeah, and there's loads of different countries which have different beliefs and things as well, which does make it quite difficult from a world perspective, standpoint and perspective as well. Like, for example, I know people who won't come out because it will jeopardize their careers because they need to go to those countries to work.
Oh.
And they're like, well, it's not worth the risk at the moment. Like I'm a lot of gay people put their careers first because they come out late. Like it's a big thing. And it's why a lot of gay men and women are quite successful because they don't come out till later. It's like, it's a distraction for me, my sport and being the best I can possibly be at sport, which I think is now why I'm doing quite well because it's been like such a focal point. And for me, it's like a lifestyle now. Like I don't wake up and I'm like, oh, I need to go to the gym. And it's like, I'm going to the gym.
One of the things you said before that I think, just pulling it back, you said how it's seen as a weakness as coming out or being gay is seen as a weakness in sport. But obviously what you do, world record holder, all this, winning.
Are you the only one here who doesn't have a world record? Oh, God.
Cal doesn't have a world record.
It's all at the table.
Cal.
Cal. What should we get?
We need to do a world record. Oh, my God. Well, so me and Cal will think about our separate adventure. Cal, get making notes. That. Also, there's four of us in the room.
I said at the table.
Yes, I am the only one at the table who hasn't got a world record.
You've got to play your cards at some time.
But you do, fair enough. So sport is seen, sorry, the gay conversation, coming out in sport is a weakness. And you've obviously really proven that wrong, anyway, from my perspective and your Instagram following perspective. I think there'll be a lot of people who are listening to this who might even want to come out and aren't 100% sure how to do that. And sport, it absolutely isn't seen as a weakness if you come out. But how are you getting that message across to those people? What do you tell people when they're messaging you? Like, how can you prove to them? Because they're like, oh yeah, but like Jake's really handsome and he's done really well. Pretty privileged. But these kids are also in sport thinking, I want to do that, but I don't know.
I think that's it, is it's just being, for me, like it's just being successful. And that is a kind of another, it's a reason why for me. Again, we always talk about like, what are your whys? Why do you do it? And it is a big factor. It's like kind of proving everyone else wrong and being that role model. So people can look up and be like, I want to be like that guy. I can be like that guy. Like he's doing what I can do. So it's a role model is one. And then I think what I tell people is like, just start talking about it and like, getting comfortable having the conversations, because that's the hardest part. Like when I first came out and told my dad, I literally was on the floor crying and he asked me if I was dying.
Really?
Like that's the level of like pent up angst that you're creating for yourself. And it's so much, like it's a lot. So I think the biggest thing I could recommend is, even if it's to a therapist or someone who's so far removed from your actual life, or me, I mean, I report any message that's like genuine, like, I need help or I want to talk about something, I'll listen, I'll reply to voice notes, I'll do whatever. But I do think having someone where you can just start, and it's almost like it's your own therapy. Like for me, when I first started doing stuff on Instagram, it was my own therapy because I was talking about it. I was answering questions, which I didn't even think of questions myself. Like it was, and it just allowed me to be way more comfortable and just sort of understand who I was and like just feel more comfortable. So then when I come, a lot of the questions is like, how do you come out to your parents? And it's like, the more you are comfortable with what you want to say to them, the easier it will then become. So I think the conversation's the biggest part and it's the hardest part, but it's once you start coming to terms with it, it's like, okay.
What was it okay for you when you actually did have those conversations?
Yeah, dad was fine. Mum struggled a little bit to begin with. But I said to her, I was like, I understand, like it's, as we said, spoke earlier, generational thing. Mm-hmm. Like I will give you time, but if I don't see sort of like progress or working on it, because you get told that like, you're going to get kicked out of your house or you're going to get removed from your family. And sometimes it does happen and it's like really sad, but I have such a close relationship with my parents that I was like, you're either going to love me for the way I am or you're going to lose me. Like I've got Paul as a security network at this point in time. I have enough money saved up that ultimately I don't need you as a parent. So I need you as friends and like
family.
Support, and that kind of helped. And I had people close to me that would basically were like, stop being an idiot. Like,
yeah.
So, which was good. But yeah, friends, everything else was absolutely sweet. Like, it was almost a celebration of strength as opposed to being weak. Like, coming out is the strong part and you should celebrate that.
I love that. I thought it was really important just for you to share maybe a little helping hand for.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because a lot of the time people say, like, I try to be quite realistic on Instagram and be like, I have down times, I have up time. Like, I'm not just like all the time. So I think it is key to be like, it is flipping difficult, but it's very rewarding. Mm. So like the biggest thing that I used to say was like the fear of losing sort of like family, friends, relationships, work was way more powerful than like the fear of losing was more powerful than the prospect of gains. And the prospect of gains was coming out and having Paul or having a relationship with a man or like, but I didn't know what they looked like because I didn't have any role models. So hopefully I can be that sort of like prospect of gains for someone, even if it's one person, then they won't necessarily lose too much.
Well, that comes back to the negativity bias in general, because as human beings, we'll always focus on the biggest negatives and what we're going to lose rather than what we're going to gain.
Massively, yeah.
So I think it's good to see those visual representations.
Mm-hmm. But even the conversation about, like, we spoke about PTs earlier about trying to build a presence or a social media online. It's like, just do it. Like, just start doing it.
Just start.
Like, just start. And it's like, you never know where it might take you. You might get people that are going to criticize you. You might get people that are going to say stuff behind closed doors or whatever about you. But if it's something that you want to do, it's something that you're passionate about, people will follow. Like, there will be people out there with the same mindset and the same goals and the same things that you want to achieve. It's hard to find them, but you will find them at some point if you keep doing what is genuinely you. Like, I think that's like quite a core thing, isn't it?
Well, the positive thing now is it does have its benefits to be different in a modern world and with social media. So nobody, the superpower that you have is nobody can be you and nobody's going to be able to copy or imitate you because there's only one version. So play to those strengths. Obviously, one of those things that is a strength that we spoke about before for you, like, you're not by the high rocks. You're pretty good there.
I mean, you're all right. Yeah.
I'm getting there. Yeah. It's taken a while. Like, my results prior to the last month haven't been great, but I've had a very...
You've not been in High Rocks long? You've
a
not?
Year, yeah.
That's... I think that would shock a lot of people, as in you've only done it for 1 year.
That's not... Yeah, when we say Jake's pretty good at High Rocks, he's just...
Yeah, that was a joke,
record, yeah.
By the way. that was a record. That, no, but you have only... But just before High Rocks, you said when you were kind of leaving football, you were also prepping for a marathon.
Yeah.
So the running element for you, just before we slide into the High Rocks genre, you're a really fast runner.
Yeah, running's kind of fast. Always been my bag. So anytime I played football, I got away with being less skillful and better in terms of the running factor and fitness. So anytime I'd rock up to pre-season, everyone would be like, oh my God, like doing the bleep test or Cooper Field run and just lap everyone like four times. But yeah, I did London Marathon last year. No, 2 years ago now. Before it changed over. And then after that, put full focus into High Rocks.
And what did you do in that London Marathon?
2:45. But I think if I did another two marathon block, I think marathon's all about experience.
It is, for sure.
And because I'm heavier, I'm 87 kilos, just put that out. Because I'm heavier, it does make it a bit more difficult. But I think if I did like a full marathon block, I reckon I could, I was on track to do 2:30 and then I just blew up.
The
thing that's crazy with amateur marathon running and High Rocks now is that the times are just getting crazier and crazier. Yeah. And it's interesting to see where and how that's going to evolve over the next couple of years as well.
I think it's massively like a mental barrier as well, isn't it? Like, as soon as it's like someone the self 4 minute mile, like Bannister, like as soon as one person does it, everyone's done it. Like, it was like breaking 60 in High Rocks was like, is anyone going to do it? Happen, and now Hunter just run a 53, like 7 minutes faster.
Yeah, that
is just crazy.
So go on, sorry, Ben.
For anyone who's new coming into High Rocks, what would your top three tips be?
Build your base. Like, you just need that aerobic and muscular endurance base. I think, like, it's really difficult. I'm lucky in a sense that I've always trained like this from when I was like 16. So I'm not coming into it, although I'm new to the sport, I'm coming into it as someone who's trained with a high workload. Again, going back to sort of like the being in the closet as a gay person, I was just like, fuck, kill myself in the gym, like anything to sort of distract my mind, I guess. But yeah, just building those those two almost separately, I guess, and then trying to then combine. So my biggest thing has been I'm very good at running, quite strong, but obviously not like compared to a lot of like lifters. So I'd run with the runners and lift with the lifters. And now I'm trying to blend the two. And it's like, it slowly started to come into fruition now with the results that I got over the last few weeks.
Okay. Number one. Second tip.
Just
people go into the first event more to this force and make sure they're not making the stupid mistakes.
I build the workload gradually. Like it's a lot. Like for me, it doesn't seem that much, but for someone who's never touched gym before, or they're quite new to gym, or all they do is like hypertrophy work, the volume's so different. Like you're repping out, say you do a men's pro, you do at the end of everything, you do a 9 kilo wall ball for 100 reps. That's 900 kilos you're squatting and then putting over your head.
I've never looked at it like that.
Like that's nuts.
It's quite impressive, isn't
it? Like, yeah. Well, so a woman, like if you do 75 at 6 kilos, like you're repping a lot of weight down and up. And that's at the end of your event. Plus you've got 8.7K worth of running. Then you've got sled push. I think Red Bull did a video. It was quite good, actually. It was where they put like what it's worth next to, like it was like elephants or something on like the sled push or something. That. But yeah, it's just high volume and it's all in one race. So I would say just kind of get used to the workload and do it over time so you don't get injured, because I put my back out at the beginning of the year. And it meant I couldn't really train for 6 months.
I remember that.
So I did High Rocks Worlds in Manchester with literally like a heat, you can see the video. I've got like a heat pad, like a deep heat pad on my back. And I literally was in so much pain, but I was like, I need to just complete it.
That's the biggest thing with marathons. Well, I think it's 79% of people who train for a marathon get injured.
So yeah. And it's like, do your little bits of S&C work as well. Like don't neglect that. Maybe go and see a physio. Like the workload is a lot. So go and see a physio once a month if you're doing it, or once every 2 weeks. Like, don't be afraid to put money into your physical health and well-being, I think is a key thing. And that's what I've started to do a lot more, is see physios and actually get like the little things from build up from the bottom almost and make sure everything's...
Well, a lot of people with those sort of things and injuries tend to be, and I'm the same, is more reactive rather than proactive with it. So if you can early set that base of looking after yourself, making sure you're on top of recovery, it does make a difference.
But it's funny, like a lot of people are like, oh, don't your knees hurt? And I don't think I've, such weird. I don't think I've ever had knee pain.
My
running volume is so high. Maybe in like 10 years time, my knees will just collapse. But people that have knee pain tend to be those that like are like part-time runners or like people that run 10 or 3-5 Ks a week or whatever people tend to run. But because my running volume is so high, I think it's just kind of...
Yeah, that's... I've not been injured. Oh, no.
I can't say I've not been injured.
Black magic. That what you just said there, the amount of volume that I now run, I've not really experienced like running like injuries. The pain. Like I'm also get like calf pain or like muscle pain because of doing the other gym work as well as running. Like sometimes I feel so heavy or sore, like doing the hybrid approach. But actual joint pain.
Hybrid as fuck.
I don't actually, don't really get. And what you've said there, it's probably people who like dip in and dip out a little bit more.
Exactly. Yeah.
But they also, so what some people would say like, oh, because I get physio like every 2 weeks or every week because maintenance, keeping on top of it. But
it feels good.
And it feels great. I love a sports massage. But I won't be going out every weekend and spending £200 on drinking.
Yeah.
And I think that's what sometimes people would find hard to fathom.
I on the opposite spectrum, I walked into town, I think we went to the theatre, and I walked back, and the amount of people that were out drinking, I was like, I don't think I can think of anything worse. Like, I'm such a recluse when it comes to like going out and drinking and like social gatherings like that, where you're like getting pissed. And I was like, I'm so like, in the minority here. Like I didn't really, obviously I knew a little bit, but I was like, how do we get to these people that go out drinking all the time?
We always have this conversation because Ben's actually sober
at the moment. I don't drink.
Yeah. I mean, I have I love the occasional glass of red wine. I just mulled wine, Chris. Love an occasional steak.
I don't
red
see
wine.
That as drinking though. So I probably would have a mulled wine, but I'm
an occasional drinker. Yeah. But there is, I still believe, such this strong stigma of, so I train pretty much every day, but then that is seen as so much worse than someone who goes out drinking a couple of times a week.
What's seen as worse, sorry?
Training
every
day.
If I train every day.
I don't know. I think it's definitely getting better in culture in terms of.
I think the running thing, like London vibe, like run club.
Oh yeah, that
scene has like kicked off.
Yeah,
like
it has.
Switching the social, but I think it's still just like a huge level of people. And it's all. I'm not saying it's bad to go out and have a drink with your mates and have fun, one iota. But I think it's like, I'd like to see more people get involved with. Yeah.
I think that's definitely a good thing to note, is that it's no one saying it's a bad thing to go out and drink and do whatever, because I've been through my years of getting plastered and welly and crawling home. I think it's the very end of the spectrum that we're referring to, is where people see it as like pointing finger or negative if you don't want to drink. There's definitely that kind of pressure. Mm. But I think the more people are coming through in health and fitness, or the more Hoobmans, Chris Williamsons, who are showing the value of being sober.
It's like, the grass is greener on this side.
It's when you experience
you feel better.
Also, the thing that I've noticed personally is that when I've said, like, I'm going sober for this period, it's been way easier. Because, say, for example, even coming up to Christmas Eve with the boys, they're talking about forfeits and Jaeger bombs, and they're saying, but Ben's forfeit will just be to, like,
run.
Have a Diet Coke, or, like, get brain freeze because we put so much ice in it. And they're really understanding because I'm sober, rather than me going out and going, oh, I'm just not drinking tonight. Then there's sometimes more pressure. You go, oh no, go on, just have. But because you've set the table. They understand it a lot more accepting. That's why I've found it a lot easier to do that as well.
Yeah, it is probably easier for like myself. I'll go to, if I do go out for drinks, I'll be like, can I have a soda and blackcurrant?
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, they get it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes you get a bit of peer pressure and be like, oh, just have one. I'm like, one, I fucking hate the taste of it.
Mm.
Two, it's like £8 a pint. No. Three, I'm going to feel like shit even if I have one, because I'm terrible.
Yeah,
like,
I am.
But yeah, as you said, like the peer pressure for me, because everyone knows that I don't really drink, is fine. But I guess if you're used to going out with your mates and getting blasted, and you're like meant to be like the fun one, and meant to be like, you have this expectation of you, it can probably be quite.
Yeah. That's why my advice, sorry to just interrupt before you go in, is be, if it's around Christmas or any social time, is, and we've said this before about weight loss things, is just say, oh, I'm doing my, either a challenge or my own personal challenge, because people usually back off straight away then because you've said, I'm doing this for me, or you've got something sort of which is carrying you through it.
I also meant in terms for when I bought it up, was because it's not, I love a social drink like that. It wasn't that point. It was more so people who have, like, if someone wants to go out every week and drink, all for you, like, you go for it. I've nothing to say. We're not judging. Whereas the other way around, people who drink all the time would look at us and be like, you're obsessed with training. But I would be like, well, me looking after myself 6 or 7 days a week and you drinking 3 or 4, I'm not judging you. My point was, I think that culture of people judge.
Yeah, my biggest pet peeve is when people message me.
That's what I meant.
I think you should rest.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I know I need to rest, but you don't need to tell. I don't need you to tell.
Yeah, it comes from, I'd never say to someone, I'll stop drinking 4 days a week. I'm like, you live your best life, but I'm also living my best life. But I get a lot of like, oh, you're so boring. Oh God, come on. Like, I still get that now, and I wouldn't do it to them. So I don't, that was the point I tried to make before.
I think that sometimes comes from a perspective of either one, not understanding, or two, sometimes a bit of jealousy, because
they want to be like that.
Yeah, when you're making extreme progress, a lot of people I think would like to be sober or have that level of fitness, but some people are sometimes scared.
I think that's why people respect it so much though. Like, think about how big your following is as well. Like, there's so many people that respect that because I guess they probably can't do it for themselves.
Mm.
I guess, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
When I say scared of the success, what I mean is that they're scared of the sacrifice that will have to be made for success. So if you want to stop being a smoker or stop being a drinker, sometimes you're going to have to sacrifice the friends that you've got in order to do that, because you can't expect habits to change when the habits that you've got fall into cohesion with the social group that you have.
I definitely lost like friends. I did move to Birmingham, which obviously like creates a distance, but like from not drinking, I think you definitely do stop, not necessarily getting invited to things, but like certain events, it would be like, man, Jake probably doesn't want to go to that. And to be honest, I still want the invite. I'm going to say no.
Because I started Loose Days Fit at uni. So I started really quite young, when I was 18, 19. And I pretty much drank the first year of uni, like really drank. And then I was like, do you know what? It's actually not for me. Started Loose Days Fit. And then people just slowly stopped starting like invite me anywhere, and it's a bit like I'd still like to come back. I can still come and just not drink. Like, one of the things that I do now, like even we're going out with the girls on Saturday, I'm driving, so I'm designated
driver.
There's
places that give you free drinks if you're the driver.
Is that?
I think it's, was it,
is that, is it, I just feel like,
is it BrewDog?
I don't know.
That's cool.
Oh, we don't have one of those here.
I don't think I have one of those.
Is it?
That's a cool initiative.
Yeah. That's nice.
So like, if you're a driver, you get a free drink.
I might even just try that this weekend.
Yeah, I'm the driver.
You try that everywhere we go anyway.
I'm the driver. To be fair, I only get like a sparkling water or a tap water, but that is one thing that I sometimes do. I'm like, oh, I don't mind. I'll drive.
Yeah, I can leave early. I've
got my car. I can drive. Yeah. I like to go to bed.
I like to sleep.
I can have one little small glass of red wine, and that is honestly gorgeous for me. But it is. It's not. We're not saying, by the way, people who are listening, that you should not be social with drink, because I still drink. I know Ben's not. You're probably like an occasional drink a bit more. It's each to their own. It's just when this is our experience of like what we've experienced in terms of alcohol and fitness.
And being fitness gurus.
Not fitness obsessed. But no, it is difficult.
You put a post up the other day, I think, as well, about Hyrox, about how you see some people who are sort of digging themselves into whole training, like smashing the training sessions really high intensity, but then race times don't get better, or they're not getting better year on year. Explain a little bit more about that.
It's hard because you don't want to like say stuff about pages or posts and things, but I think it's like people need to have the education as well. Like, it's like you're not just, it's like I think I put on the caption, it's like you're not going to get better at 5k if you keep going and doing 25 minute 5k.
Same with a 90 minute football match. You just go and do a 90 minute football match every day.
So it's like your fitness is going to be fit, like you're going to be able to do that, and even having that as a base level of fitness is great. But it's like, if you want to, which a lot of people do, it's like, I want to get better. It's like you need to like break down the training way more. Like, there's so much to it. Hyrox is, there's obviously, it's standardized, like everything is the same, but there's so much more to like fitness. Like, you'll see a lot of people post about their like heart rates has been a massive thing in the last few years, of I think with like the Whoop and Coros and Garmin and like fitness tech, and like having zone one, zone two, zone three. But it is kind of a bit like that, in terms of like, look at running, for example. And I tend to break it down into like running specifically. It's like, you're not going to go and just do that 20-minute 5K. Like, you have to do speed work if you want to get quicker. You then have to do long runs if you want to build your endurance. Like, and then you have to then combine it together and have a decent mileage for a long period of time. Like, you can't just go and run for a week and then do gym work for a week and then run the next week. Like, it doesn't quite work like that. So I think having like, if you want to get better, it's wise to get a coach, or just to speak to someone and like periodize your own training for like a peak, for example. And then it's the same with sort of weights. Like, you need to be doing your compound lifts. Again, preventing injury is probably one of the biggest factors for that. But if you go and do HIIT classes every week, yeah, you're going to be really good at HIIT classes, but it's not the same. Like, you then have to, there's not much running in most HIIT classes unless you're going to do a Barry's, but you probably don't want to do a run on the treadmill and then go and do RDLs. No offense, Barry's.
But. Yeah. But that is the thing with like Hyrox as well. What I think the reason it is, I mean, it is so popular now, isn't it? It's wildly popular.
It's gone nuts.
And the level of it is getting higher and higher and higher. But the thing with Hyrox, because it is so standardized, it's not like CrossFit, is it? Where it's like,
it's a fitness race. It's like a competition.
Of loads of, like, you turn up on a day for CrossFit and they're like,
it could be anything, yeah.
This is your workout. Yeah. And it's like swimming, bike, wall balls, snatches or whatever. Because Hyrox is so standardized, I mean, I think this anyway, when I'm training for it, you can work on your weaknesses as well as working on your strengths. But if you're really, really good at like rowing, skiing, or like the burpees or whatever,
or you can smash 100 wall balls. You're
not going to put as much time into that. Whereas like we spoke about before, my sled pull is not great. Your sled pull is your sled pull is also not the best. But that means you can just put extra time. I mean, this is same from my perspective. You can put extra time into those areas that you're not so good at, because you know it's not going to change. You know the weight. You know the distance, so you pull heavier and you pull further.
Well, they call it like the marathon of fitness, isn't it? In a sense, like, you know, you've got times to beat, you've got set stations, you know exactly what it's going to be. You can then go and beat your own time, which is why I think it's probably like the perfect all-round fitness race.
Yeah.
And the epitome of like who the fittest, obviously CrossFit, you can argue, is like the fittest people on earth. But in terms of like racing fitness, it's...
We had that conversation with
Fergus.
Hunter and Fergus about being like, what is defined
as the fittest man on earth.
Because
I would say Hunter probably is.
Well, Well, I wouldn't be far off that because I get CrossFit. I'm so impressed.
He got invited.
Did he compete?
I think so. I don't know where he came.
I don't know. I can't remember. Well, did he compete? We spoke about it in the podcast.
The only thing I'd say about the HYROX thing is like it's very much geared towards runners. Running. I'd say CrossFit is probably more geared towards strength. So it's difficult to...
We did Athex the other week.
You did?
That was good fun.
Yeah, that's a bit more of a...
So that was strength. So it was quite cool actually because there was people that were really strong and then people like me who are weaker overhead. I can run. Like I did a squat that was decent and then I beat everyone on the run by like 4 minutes, which didn't make an absolute difference because it's points based on 1, 2, 3, 4 5. But we came third overall, but then there was people that, so it was quite a good sort of like even
between
comparison of both people could compete because there was erg work, strength, metcon, which was quite cool. So it was kind of like the in between.
Yeah, the CrossFit and HYROX. With CrossFit, I think if you said to CrossFitters, go and run a marathon or go and run a 20K, they would find that a lot harder.
It depends on the athlete, doesn't it? Some of them like a bit better.
I just wonder how they've picked the fittest on earth is CrossFitters.
I've wiped the floor with most CrossFitters on a run.
Yeah.
But like overhead, they could probably do triple what I can do. So it's like...
So that's why I find hard to judge.
I don't think you can, but I think when there's a level, like when they're like, when you get to like Hunter, who's like 5 minutes, 6 minutes ahead of most other people on his day, that's like kind of just have to sit back and go,
well done.
Wow. Yeah. Like I went out and trained with him in LA and it was like, yeah.
Were you humbled?
Not really, because we mostly ran.
Ah.
And running wise,
he humbled?
No, he'd probably still, we did a mile race up this like mountain that was just like, and he absolutely wiped the floor with me, to be honest.
Did he?
Yeah.
But that's good,
he's
though.
He's used that terrain.
Yeah, exactly,
well,
yeah. Pure horsepower.
Yeah.
We spoke about before, you run with elite runners and you'll train with people who are stronger than you. How important do you think it is to put yourself in an environment where you're not the best?
I think it's definitely a sacrifice. Like, I think, obviously, I train with runners and I have a great, like, most of my friends in Birmingham are runners, but I think, like, I don't tend to train too much with other people when in like a HYROX gym environment. Like I know what workout I need to do. I know like what I need to hit on terms of like the running paces and things like that. Cause like we go into quite a lot of detail with it, but I think it's definitely like, I wouldn't say lonely, but it's not the social aspect. Like if I wouldn't move to London because of the way that my training is right now.
Mm. What do you think it would be compromised?
Yeah. Because of like the social aspect. Yeah, people want to run for those social things, and I'm obviously like I'd love to do that as well, but I'm at a point now where I'm like I could be top five in the world within the next year, and I think I will be putting a lot of pressure on myself probably, but I think if I moved it would like a lot of social and running and having to do lots and lots of other things would just take away from like pure focus.
Mm.
So that's
where it depends what your goal is, isn't it?
Yeah, massively.
For a lot of people, they'd benefit from that social. But then when you're trying to be at the pinnacle and the top of the iceberg, you've got to do that. That's where you see people, Matt Frazier, Taylor Toomey, they're just in the gym on their own, going through the shit in the dungeon, in the pain cave over
and that's
and
a
over
sacrifice. It's the same with anything.
You have like to be able to be at that level.
If you look at people that get to the top of their game, CEO, wherever, like, you know, not just out chilling with your people, just like working.
There's no balance at the top.
Like you're like, there's so much behind the scenes that goes on to get to the top, and it's like I've kind of done the hard work, and I just need to get that next step up. Which, as you said, like 25 to 29 category,
it's so different.
It's weird. I don't know why.
It's
I don't
so
know
different.
Why the times are so different. But hopefully, I'm all right for the next few years.
Yeah, anyway, you've got 4 or 5 more
but again,
years.
When you get to elite 15, doesn't matter what age you are, does it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, hopefully I'm in at a right age though. So being 25, I've got another 10 years of training.
I think it's definitely beneficial. Even if you're not training with someone all the time, just every now and again to kind of have a metric stick to prop up against something else.
I think the running wise, most of the boys that I run with are like, everyone's like sub 17, 5K minimum.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because Harvard did a study on this in terms of one of the main contributors to people's success, and it was the people that you surround yourself with by a huge margin. And even the same is with if you've got people around you I don't know, quote unquote, not as good or less than you in terms of the equivalent, yeah. then it's going to pull you back.
Yeah.
Especially like even today, how much we're doing a sim together, you're going to have to pull back yeah. on that sim. And if you train with me all the time, you'd potentially constantly be doing that.
That's what I mean. When when my training is like, sometimes I just know I have to just,
yeah, yeah.
I'm just training on my own.
Mm. I trained with Zach George last week. And I was just fucking humbled beyond yeah. belief because, but it's, I like that because then I'll come back to my own training block and be like, I need to train yeah. harder to be, and I don't need to be at that standard because that level is just above and beyond like what I need to really train to yeah. for what I'm trying to achieve.
Essentially the fittest man in the UK.
Yeah,
right?
yeah. But it's good to kind of just prop your metric stick up sometimes. And again, to say we shouldn't compare is stupid. We're always going to compare to other people. It's what we do as yeah. social animals and beings. But it's good just sometimes to have those different feelers and put yourself yeah. out there and be yeah. outside the comfort
zone. And I think as well, like when you put yourself in that environment, like when I first moved up to Birmingham, I was running kind of like, I mean, I could run well, but I wasn't, my training was just like, I just go for a couple of K or whatever. I then joined the club and saw everyone else's environment and their training, and everyone's is always different, but you then take pieces of their knowledge and put them into your own and kind of weave that into your own system and see what works. And now I'm like, my mileage is doubled compared to where I was because I knew that I just wasn't hitting the mileage that I needed to have that sort of endurance. And I get to train with the best people and you just level up.
Yeah. And that's it. Like I love training on my own a lot of the time. Like I enjoy just going in like the garage and just doing like a high rocks thing by myself. Or if I have like a specific run, it's usually because I've got a specific pace to hit. So I love doing that. But then I also do love the social element. Like we did a run club, didn't we?
Yeah.
With like 60 people.
Yeah.
But that's obviously at a very different pace than what I'd usually do. So I do like the social element. And like I go to hybrid a lot to do high rock sessions. And they're all really good. And I love putting myself in that environment, but then I love just
yeah, I think the balance
coming
is
back,
so key.
Really key. Because it
your
can get lonely.
Social batteries as well. Like I love going into London or going wherever or coming up here and being like full on and being like, let's have a wicked time. Mm-hmm. And then I go back, I chill with Paul and the dog and I'm like in my little bubble, which I like. And then I'm like, right, I'm ready to go again. Bosh. Yeah. Smash it. Like it's for me, it's like the perfect balance at the moment. And then also like training wise, as you said, like you need, if you want to level up, you need to have a level of sort of like sitting down with yourself and being like, this is what I need to do. This is where I'm going to have my social interactions whilst training, and then kind of find your perfect balance. Like everyone's training is different. Mm-hmm.
It's also
for you, you've for a lot of years trained with guys, which I think is a benefit because the guys' times are quicker, they're a bit stronger. Like it doesn't matter if we want to be PC or argue about shit, the men are faster and stronger than women. So you putting yourself in that environment to train with men all the time naturally just elevates how hard you have to train.
Yeah, because I get angry.
You need to get Meg or Lauren Weeks to come over and train.
Oh my God,
Meg's
yeah.
an absolute.
She's the blonde one, yeah, isn't she?
She's really nice.
Is it Jacoby?
Yeah, Meg Jacoby. She ran a 58 in the women's pro.
Really?
Yeah. She is in the same one. They're Elite 15, 1 and 2.
Yeah, they like kind of.
But they're similar. Meg, they have like a garage gym. They just like smash it out. I think Lauren's a mum as well. She was like a new mum.
But to be fair, we were speaking about this and we were talking about how like in, I don't know, I think it might have been Russia, but they used to like impregnate the woman and like then get them to like compete in the Olympics because they're like testosterone levels or whatever, but like
that
spiked.
That is mental.
So like this was years ago.
Oh my God.
Obviously. But it wouldn't surprise you, would it?
Yeah. really wouldn't surprise you. Like, get that little Hulk.
So like when she competed at the World Champs, she was probably like, almost like,
she,
probably like
yeah,
more than being like juiced
absolutely
up.
Smashed it. But I do enjoy that. I love training with people who are
levels
faster, better than me, because then I like the chase. I like chasing someone else or someone else's time. So growing up as a swimmer, I train with guys. They were all well faster than me, but I'm like, oh, how much can I
keep up? It's like me training with people faster than me running.
It's like when we go on a run later, Jake, you're going to have to we're going to go on an easy aerobic jog. But yeah, the high rocks thing, it's when you're going to have, might be humbled again or.
Oh yeah, sure will be.
Certain different things.
What is your split like at the moment in terms of your training?
I do a lot of the running separate just naturally, because as I said, it's kind of like, it's just my routine. Yeah. Like Monday, just easy 10K with the dog. Tuesday, maybe a plod in the morning, just walk the dog. And then Tuesday track session in the evening, which will be about like 12 to 13K volume, just with like 4K warm up, track session, 4K warm down, just home and back. Wednesday, the rest, or if I feel okay, just plod. But that will also have like a high rocks kind of session in it. Thursday, track session again. Friday, rest or like a 10K tempo. Saturday, rest or tempo, depending on whether I rest it on Friday. And then Sunday, long run.
What resistance and strength work?
We're just about to do a new block, so I actually don't know, but normally like 5 days.
Five days.
Yeah, so I'll do
so
a bit
usually
of
double days at the moment.
Yeah, I do it. Most days are double days, yeah.
Yeah, you're hitting it hard, aren't you?
Yeah. The volume has to be high. Yeah. Like you have to, as long as you can build up to that, like that's like now my kind of like base. Yeah. Like it will, like the next 4 weeks is going to be like, and I'll probably do like yoga and stuff in between and mobility. And
what are your longest runs?
I won't go more than half marathon.
20, I saw someone speaking about that for HYROX, saying that the HYROX base fitness level is kind of based around the half marathon.
I suppose
that's how long it takes.
Depends if you're more of a runner or not. Like my time, I'm getting better now, but my time running wise was way off my half marathon. My half marathon's like, well, what I tried to do the other week, a couple of weeks back, was a 3:19 per kilometer, which is a 72.
Silly baby.
No, 70. yeah. And it's like my running was like 4 minutes when I was doing it. Yeah. Like, but now I'm bringing, now it's down to like 3:40. So I'm trying to get down to 3:30.
That is. But yeah, I think because of how long HYROX will take.
It's about
being
right.
Being able to run a half.
If you're not like a runner and you have the strength, it's probably about your half marathon time.
So building up to
being able to run a half marathon. If you were going to do your own HYROX, I'd probably say like you have to be able to run for an hour minimum, like comfortable, at like a decent pace.
Yeah.
And then all your compound lifts to a decent standard, and then you'd be okay.
With HYROX, this is like a blowout question. When obviously you've got the stations and then you've got the running, which is your hardest station into your run? I know what mine is, and I think mine will shock you.
I think it's the sled pull because of my arms.
But going into a run?
It's weird, yeah. Like
My
lats and my back, because I'm quite efficient in my running. Yeah, and I'm hench.
Oh, hench.
It's like when you're up, yeah, I think sled pull. But it's also my worst station, and I just like, it's one of those where like my...
negative association to it. Do you know what mine is?
Or heart farmers, maybe. But the arms...
arms over...
Yours must be lunges, no?
Yes, lunges. Yeah. What the hell? As in, I can run off tired legs. I think that helps because I run distances.
Yeah.
Like my legs have been in bad places before on runs. So I know in my head I can always run. When I first came off, the first HYROX I ever did, when I came off those lunges, I was like, my legs aren't working.
It's almost like your knees don't bend.
I did nothing, like... nothing was working. Like I found it really difficult. But for me, that's what I really practice. So that's one of the things with HYROX is it's not just obviously your functional fitness and you're running separate.
It's the combo, yeah.
That's the biggest thing, for sure.
At Joe Skipper, who's an Ironman legend, he ran a 2:30 marathon after his HYROX life in Swansea, which is like in Rosilli area, which is like just hills. I don't actually know what his time was, but he didn't like win.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, he's not got the strength-based work to potentially push the sled like others his legs are strong, but... farmers and ski erg and things, so it's definitely like it's humbling if you haven't done it and then people do it because my brother and sister did a pairs one together in London when I was there, so I did it on the Saturday, broke the world record if you didn't know. It was a British record for the open, and it was an open time. I normally do the pro, but I've had a bad back I had an operation.
It's okay, you got the world record. You don't need to know that.
So yeah, they did it and they finished and they did it. I think they did like an hour and 12, which is like, it's like decent. Like they're both quite fit. And they were like, you are just a joke. Like what the hell? So.
It's unbelievable. But it is, it's very different than just going for a run or doing a lifting session, because running on tired legs and it's running fast on tired legs is a very humbling experience. It really is.
Yeah,
after that sled push and after those lunges.
This is the thing I was going to ask you, because I even think about it sometimes, and a lot of people speak about it. Are you redlining most sessions that you're doing?
Probably getting into, probably. Not track stuff. Like, the track stuff I find quite comfortable, quite easy. Like, I could probably push a bit harder on that. But I think, like, when I do, like, a higher rock session, I'm probably working harder than I would in a higher rock.
Do you do, like, any back off, just kind of slower engine builder sort of sessions?
Like, high roxy based stuff. Sometimes, like, if I'm not feeling it,
So you're going off base how your body feels?
Kind of, yeah. Like, a lot of the time. Like, if I'm not feeling it, I'm not going to get a good session in. I'm then going to compromise the next day.
Yeah.
Because you're working so hard. Like, if you're going into red that often, your immune system's suppressed anyway.
Mm.
You're just going to get ill. Like, you have to learn. Like, I'm learning a lot that sometimes less is more. Like, obviously, my workload, my load is high, but like, sometimes less is more. Like, if you're not feeling it, just sit on the bike for 2 hours or an hour and just flush out the legs, get some zone two aerobic work in, and then hit the session hard on the next one.
And that's what a lot of people struggle with. So it's nice to hear that sometimes, because I think everyone thinks every day, I've got to show up, I've got to put my pedal, my foot down the pedal as hard as possible, but I don't always feel like I can do it. So it's, I think, it's very individualistic to people and what they feel. Females as well, because women go through periods of the mental cycle where you can't put the pedal down every single day when you're going through the late luteal phase. There's other things that are coming into it. You don't have as high levels of testosterone. So it is, as a woman, knowing
it's harder for us, basically, guys.
Your pain threshold a little bit lower. There's just things that
more options to...
Why are you getting offended by that?
I've got quite a good pain threshold.
I'm not saying you haven't, but we've got fatigue less. We have
vote for women. We fatigue less.
Be quicker then. What was I going to say? Oh yeah, that again, a perfect point in terms of like why doing a HIIT class isn't perfect every time. Because when you do a HIIT class, there's other people there. They're going to push you hard. You're going to redline. Like, not every session needs to be that type of session.
Yeah.
So it is important, like, to back off and do. But that's when having a coach makes a massive difference.
Yeah, because you've got structure.
Because you're then, he's like, or she's like, no, like, this is what we're doing. As opposed to you being like, oh, because I'm guilty. I'd redline every session.
With that pain thing though, all I mean is that it's what testosterone does.
Oh no, I wasn't offended.
It allows you to endure more pain. It's like when I took steroids in the gym, I could just like endure so much training because that's what testosterone helps you do.
I've never taken any drugs. So the only thing I take is creatine and betraline. I'd love to take something just to see the difference.
Like, you don't have to lie, because on the podcast, you know, you can tell
people
the truth.
Like, where it would, if it would like take you to like another level.
I think the biggest thing
is training, isn't it? Like, it would allow you to train to.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So it allows you to endure more pain, allows you to endure more volume. It allows you to not
and depending
really
on what
get
you're
injured.
Taking strength.
Yeah,
goes
yeah,
up
yeah.
By, tenfold.
And you feel great off it. Do you know what I mean? But it's horrible coming off it, because then it's like any drug, you have that huge high and you get used to it. Yeah. And it's like, now I'm not Superman anymore. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So
you were also just bodybuilding.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wasn't doing all the endurance stuff.
You
I
were
was just doing
like
even,
a,
if like, even if I just like took some like EPO or something.
Yeah.
I mean, my knowledge of drug use is terrible.
Yeah. I'm not the best.
But like, yeah, it would be interesting to see like.
It's pointless though, unless you're doing everything possible first. And
yeah,
then
like,
the training.
Yeah. Like the 1%,
because then people just do it and like, they're not getting the, not that I'm saying you should be getting the most out of it.
Why are you taking?
Yeah, you should, you need to nail everything
work
else
hard,
first. Yeah.
But then it's like, it is interesting because it's huge in running. Like,
really?
Doping?
Massive. Like,
is doping? Oh, yeah, no, I knew that. I don't know why I sound like, surprised.
Like, big, like any elite marathon runner, huge suspicion.
Really? How big do you think it is in high rocks?
I've not been subject to it yet. Like, I've not, anyone that I've spoken to has denied it or said.
Oh, because everyone will do it.
But I think it's a difficult one, because I think like, if you're going to take it, I think fucking own it. Like, just be like, yeah, I take it, because it's not illegal yet in high rocks. Like, it hasn't been. So it's like, if you're going to be on it, just be like, yeah, I take whatever I take. But I think when there's money involved and it becomes kind of like And you're benefiting off it. Like, if you're building a social media profile off being this elite athlete, but you're taking.
Why would you not?
Yeah, it's just, it doesn't sit that right with me.
But. Yeah. But that's the thing of like, why would you not, for a lot of people? Because it's enhancing their careers for not much sacrifice.
Yeah, yeah. So when that incentive is there, it's like, why would I not start taking it? Obviously, there's other things that, like health and things like that, but it's like...
Do you think...
A lot of CrossFitters on it.
Oh yeah. Look at the size of their abs.
There's ways to get around it, though.
Yeah.
I just think
it's like all off season and stuff. Like running wise, it's like you just take, and then your training stimulus is so high, your recovery is better. You can then train and run the next day, like as if you hadn't trained. And then that's what makes you better, isn't it? Your training. Yeah. And then when it comes to racing, you wean off it and.
But the other thing you're saying, you think it's cheating and you wouldn't do it, but if you're at that level where I could be at the top of the CrossFit Games and everybody else is already doing it, you're at a disadvantage by going, I'm going to be the fair one. Does that make sense?
But then also think about the poorer countries like Ethiopia, for example. If you can be that 1% that gets out and has a night contract or something, then you can support your family.
Yeah,
why would you not?
Yeah.
Like, and it's so easily accessible in... out there where it's less regulated.
It's fairly cheap as well.
Yeah.
We were speaking about this the other day. Do you think it'll ever come in to HYROX testing?
They've said it will next year.
Really? But it's super expensive, mate. It's really so expensive.
There's no way they're going to...
Unless they only did like the Elite 15 or they only tested people who podiumed. I don't know what the way they're doing it.
They can't do it for Gen Pop. No. That's fucking ridiculous. No, that's... they can only do it when there's monetary value involved.
Yeah.
And the Elite 15 is churning out so quickly anyway. The only person they're probably going to test is Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hunter and
Ronkovich and Meg and Lauren.
They might do me as well because they think fucking he's just so good.
So jacked.
Yeah.
And me. No. I want to be included. Just test me.
Take
clean.
My weed.
But it is very expensive, but then it's very you don't know if they're gonna do it. You don't know.
No, they've said they'll
That just shows
it's such a new sport, though, isn't it?
It's so new. And that's the one thing I do like about HYROX. I think it's really inclusive. And it's almost like when you start introducing like drug testing, it becomes very serious. It automatically becomes very serious.
Like they're trying to make it like
inclusive.
Hence why they didn't post about
money. Yeah, because you're too fast.
because they want it to be like
inclusive.
Everyone. But I think there can be elements of like having people that you can look up to.
But it's like running. Running, I think, is a really great, inclusive sport. Yeah,
but you have
but
the
I'm
best
not
in
looking
the world.
At Kipchoge yeah, thinking, you and me. Yeah. Like, it's a difference. I think that's all.
I think it'd be good to just give everyone steroids now. Everyone be sprinting around looking like Blastoise
around
the
track. There was rumours about like a drug Olympics or something.
yeah, there was. The hop, skip, and then where the fuck did he go? Yeah.
It'd be cool though, wouldn't it? But then I guess they're all on it anyway, so there wouldn't make much difference to time.
Exactly. That's what would be funny because nothing would change.
Yeah, it would be exactly the same.
Yeah, I would be interested.
Any questions you want to go over?
We'll just finish on like two questions because look at the time.
There we go, viewers.
And we, we do. Okay. That is disgusting. Do you know what? We're going to get a one-star review. If we get a one-star review, it wasn't me, it was Jake. Oh, rotten. Is it true that smaller athletes tend to be better at performance and have less injuries?
I have no idea.
No, I don't. Is it true that smaller athletes have tend to be better? I think so. Size of you and the size of Hunter.
Yeah, but with the injury thing, if you are heavier, you are putting more stress on the joints. So it doesn't mean you're going to have more injuries.
Probably you're not going to... If you're small... Like, I think the ideal weight is what, like, most of the Elite 15 are, if you look at them, like, in terms of men in particular at the moment, because that's where I'm sitting. Like, I'm 87 kilos. Hunter at the moment's like 92. Ronkovich, I assume, is probably the same as me, like 87, 88. Like, that's probably, like, your peak where you want to be for, like, men HYROX, but you also need to run at that weight, which is a tough ask.
We can't answer your question. There we go.
Sorry. Yeah. We don't know.
There's always going to be a high risk of injury because you're carrying more load. If it's for running, especially, it's high fatigability. So,
injury wise,
if you're smaller, How long would you estimate to train for a HYROX race if you want to be competitive?
If you have a base of fitness already, depends how, I mean, podium.
Yeah, we'll take competitive as podium. You want to do really well.
It completely depends on your, like, if you have no base at all, I'm saying 4 years.
Just fucking forget it, mate. Just sack it off and do something else.
I'm serious.
If you want to be competitive, because the competition now is so high.
And just like building up to like running an 8K in 28 minutes, like that takes years. Yeah. Like I've ran since I was like eight, like at a decent level.
Most of our audience will do a bit of training. So
yeah, if you've trained, if you have a decent base, if you can run a 10K in say 40 minutes or 45 minutes, I would say 8 to 16 weeks, a bit like a marathon.
Yeah.
But again, it like High Rocks, it all depends on if you fly over to Stockholm, you might get on the podium if you run like slowly. But
in the UK,
like the events are sold out, so you're going to struggle and everyone wants to be there. So it's going to get harder and harder to capture the flag, as we call it.
That's interesting because I think in the first few years, people were just joining the events based on the already had the fitness level, whereas now people are actually doing 8 to 16 week block training for specifically
High Rocks. Yeah, for sure.
Well, the first one, me and Meg did, we podiumed. We never done it.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. But you've got like your...
We have a complete base level.
In a sense. Yeah. Like,
doing the easy one.
Yeah. There was no one turned up.
It was actually Birmingham. May I just throw in the mix? Okay, this is actually not associated to High Rocks, but it's an interesting question. If he spent the next 16 weeks focused only on running, what time could he run for a marathon?
2:35
Specific.
I think.
Yeah, I think you could for sure.
What did Nick Baer just run?
2:39
That's incredible for that size.
That is.
How heavy is
it?
How heavy is Nick Baer?
Heavy.
What's his name?
Nick Baer.
Is Nick Baer, isn't it?
Straight on Google. He's a big guy though. 93 kilos.
Yeah, that's heavy. I would drop weight though if I was to train for 16
weeks. I think you will have
weeks.
Dropped for that.
Like, I would drop to like 82 kilos. Yeah.
Would you find that hard to drop that weight? Do you think?
Not really.
You drop down quite easily.
I don't drop. To be honest, mate, I've been like 87 kilos since I was like
since you were born
19.
You came out of the womb at 87 out, kilos, ready for High Rocks.
Ready for High Rocks. Only born a couple of years. But no, for the last
Jake, that's why Jake. If you've not heard Jake before, he's just been born.
So since I was like 20, I think I've been. So for the last 5-6 years, I've been about 87 kilos. Not too,
I'm the
not
same.
Really
my
changed.
Weight only fluctuates if I do extreme things like base camp. I lost. 100K loss, but always drop 4 kilos. But then I can build it up in like a couple of weeks.
Yeah, like I dropped for that half marathon block that I tried to get 70 minutes, and I think I went down to like 83.
Oh wow!
And then literally within like a week, I was like, I got back on the scales and was like, oh.
Yeah, 87.
Yeah, that happened quick.
I'm just gonna ask one more.
Go.
And it's quite a good question. How many simulations would you recommend doing before a competition and how often? So a simulation, guys, is what we're basically doing. Is like a full run through. Ooh, I can't
believe you're saying. If you're pairs, the workload is way less. So I would probably do 2 or 3 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to take it really seriously, I'd do one like 5 days, 4 days before and then like taper off and do like a bit of light work, but completely taper off so you're like really fresh going into it. If you're doing on your own, you don't need to do, as I said, you're not going to go and just like sim out every time because you're not going to get better. So you want to go through some stations faster. You want to do some like purely erg work or purely sled push work into running and just get really good at running off the sleds, for example. So I rarely would do a full sim.
Well, you never run a full marathon before you do a marathon?
No, not really.
No, you go up to what, like 30? So
I mean, it depends. Like, if you're a pro marathon runner, you're going to be running marathons for fun. But if you're like building up, I would do one just so you get a real feel for like how long it's going to be. Say you're going to be like 1 hour and 20 minutes, you're probably going to need some fuel at some point. Your glycogen stores are just going to be empty. So you're going to then need to get used to fueling and it's going to be quite worthwhile training for that 1 hour and 20 minutes. And getting used to taking on some level of carbohydrates or
like a gel.
Some little jelly.
What's that today? We're going to be doing what? 8K? We're going to be doing
8.7 roughly.
Where is the
the start of the rock
zone. But we don't have the rock zone
today.
We'll
just run in circles.
Yeah. Just turn around.
We'll just have to go like up and back.
We're going to have a 500 meter ski and row, probably split the wall balls
50-50.
Farmers carry, burpee, broad jumps, lunges.
Farmers carry the only thing.
You can do the farm. My forearms are absolutely...
Well, me and Meg need to practice changeovers quite well, because what's really like with doubles, when you're doing it, you see some people who pass each other the ski erg, but then you're told you get disqualified.
Anymore, yeah. You won't get
and
disqualified.
Then, just... Not disqualified, you get like a time penalty. So me and Meg practice by letting go and then, but then you see some people on next ones, I'm thinking... points.
Yeah. Read the rules.
Or like the lunges where they like throw it on their bags.
You just I mean, you just do. Just keep. Just
you just do
just
not want a penalty.
Well, just standard. Like you don't cheat. Effectively.
Yeah. Don't get yourself.
But like,
a penalty.
If you can get away with little things, then like you can.
Don't cheat, but if you can.
Like, I mean, like burpees and things. Like, there's such a because the gray area is so gray. Do your technique.
Yeah.
And if someone pulls you up, then you just...
Correct it.
Yeah.
People do that in every sport, though. You've got to try and push the boundaries a little bit.
Exactly.
Well, we had that with our walking lunges. Like, our knee wasn't hitting the back floor, and we didn't know that was the thing on the first time we did it.
Yeah,
and then
like,
one of the judges was like, your knee needs to touch the floor, so we had to change, like, as we were doing it, because we were told by a judge.
Mm.
But, yeah, that is... Well, I mean, we could probably speak forever, but we are going to go do a high rock sim.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure how I feel about it, to be honest.
You got this.
Maybe it'll
be
nervous.
Fun. We'll put music on and just vibe.
It's going to be like an hour workout, though, isn't it?
It's only an hour.
Oh, it won't be an hour for me, man.
Yeah, you will.
Will it? An hour?
Aaron 4, I reckon.
Wait, so that's our... At Worlds with pro weights, we did 66, but the first time we did it, we did 64, but we want 60 in Manchester.
Yeah.
Ew.
That's a good guess though, 64.
That was a good guess. But where can people find more of you?
I'm probably most active on Instagram. Jake Williamson. Actually, I don't know my handle. If you type in Jake Williamson, there is a PT at the end, but hopefully it should come up. And I'll be tagged on some of the stuff on these posts and things.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you'll be tagged on everything.
You just find me everywhere.
Type in J.
Just type in J and I'll come up. No, yeah. Instagram's my most active. That's where I sort of get people to ask questions and try and be as engaging as possible and have sort of like a nice little community that get involved and hopefully in the next year we'll be doing some cool in-person stuff as well.
Sick.
Amazing. Thank you so much, guys, for listening or watching or wherever you are. Make sure you leave a review. You can still give us a 5-star, even though Jake slurped on the microphone. We don't have that on the Not So Fit podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and found it really helpful. Make sure you tag us in socials, everything like that. And Jake, again, thank you so much.